We're not far from the end of Sunday Extra today, but we do have a little bit of time to discuss whether the end is nigh, indeed whether there's an apocalypse coming. But not for humans, for insects. There have been headlines about an insect apocalypse for years. And recently the University of Tasmania held a forum on understanding the insect apocalypse, and that's where Jonathan Finch, lecturer in entomology at the Tasmania Institute of Agriculture, presented his take on the research into insect decline. And Jonathan joins us on Sunday Extra this morning. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good morning.
It's great to be speaking with you, Jonathan. Now, is there really an insect apocalypse?
We think so, yes. So it's a really kind of dramatic way of phrasing it, and it's really what the media has taken from it.
But I think attention grabbing, not surprising there. But what does the data tell us?
Well, the data is for the data we have, it's fairly clear. So if we go back, you know, a few decades, there's been various studies now showing 75% declines of insect biomass in parts of Europe, and really troubling declines of 10%. Of species per year lost in some parts of tropical Costa Rica, which is where actually most of the insects on the planet are. And so when we kind of put a lot of these studies together and look at them in totality, although not all of them show a decline, we can see, and the entomologists I work with can see, that there is some worrying trends in the loss of insect species across the world from where we have data.
All right. So the big picture is that there are what you described as worrying declines. But
yeah.
I believe in your talk you sort of added a bit of nuance to that about the variations in the patterns. Is that right?
Absolutely. So we have some studies, really interesting studies from far north Sweden, showing basically no decline over about 50 years. And these are in places where there's very little human activity, just a bit of forestry, a little bit of ecotourism. And over that time, we've seen the population of insects remain remarkably stable. And that's really interesting because places like the Arctic and Antarctic are actually the places that should be changing fastest under climate change. And yet we see no change at all. And we kind of only really can conclude from studies like that the lack of human activity in those areas is what's making a difference.
Right. Well, so I suppose a patchy apocalypse is better than a consistent one. What about Australia, Jonathan? Do we have a sense of exactly what's happening in Australia, and indeed specifically in Tasmania where you are?
Yeah, that's a really interesting part of the story. So unfortunately, a lot of the studies that we have come from places like Europe and North America, densely populated, lots of scientific money going to research. And places like anywhere around the equator, which is actually where most biodiversity and most insect biodiversity is, and places like Australia, the global south, we have very little data in order to answer those questions. So generally in science, funding is limited to between 3 and 5 years for a research project. That's just how it works. And really to answer these questions, you need 10 or 20 or even 50 years of data, continuously going out and monitoring the insect populations in order to understand the pattern. And that really hasn't happened in Australia or Tasmania. So we have very little tiny kind of little bits of data that tell us that maybe something's going badly wrong, mainly from freshwater ecosystems where people have been monitoring the health of rivers and streams. But we don't have the long-term data that other parts of the world do.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I was going to ask the back of that, because you referred to the examples of Costa Rica and in Germany. Are they robust long-term studies that are more reliable in the ways that the Australian data isn't?
Yeah, each of those goes for 20 or 30 years. And the beauty of those ones were they're often done by amateur entomologists, people who do it for the love of it. So the costs are much lower, and they've been monitoring those places for a long period of time. And that's why we're much more confident in those declines that they're really happening. But we just don't have that data from Australia.
What have the drivers of public discussions about, insect apocalypse been? I gather we're a little bit obsessed with bees. Is that right?
That's true, yeah. I mean, so this whole debate, I think, and the whole question around this started probably in the early 2000s when North American beekeepers in particular started to notice the loss of honeybees. Quite worrying loss, like 60% of hives are dying each winter. And that's, you know, that is an important story. It is, but honeybees are only one species out of 10 million insect species that we think occur across the world. And so from our perspective, yeah, honeybees, we need to be careful with those populations, and we need to manage them right. But we're much more concerned with what's happening to the ecosystem in general. And I should say that actually honeybee populations globally are doing fine. Like, they may be declining in some parts of the world, and you know, we've got our own issues in Australia currently, but overall honeybee populations are doing absolutely fine, if not increasing.
On Sunday Extra, we are speaking with Jonathan Finch, lecturer in entomology at the Tasmania Institute of Agriculture, and we're trying to understand the insect apocalypse, as everyone who attended the University of Tasmania forum recently was trying to do as well. You mentioned, Jonathan, that there's a correlation between human populations and insect decline. So I suppose the question is, what is known about what can be done to address insect decline where it is occurring?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we did try to take this forum into a positive way to say what things we could be doing. And the real thing is, for me as a scientist who works in agriculture, my job is really to understand the way that insects interact with the way that we produce our food. And from my perspective, I think we can do it better. So there are ways and methods that are becoming more mainstream now in terms of how we grow our food that I think can help stop some of these declines. So one of the key messages that we can do in this is basically diversification. So instead of growing a crop and just having a huge field of just the same thing, you can diversify. You can grow different crops next to each other in the same field, slightly changing the farming practice. And we know that those diversification methods really help to protect biodiversity, but they also have a range of other benefits, including soil fertility, soil health. Sometimes things like emissions as well can be benefited. So our idea is to try and do something about the way we farm, and that'll benefit the insects, but it's also going to benefit the growers as well. So it's really thinking about the way we do agriculture and trying to imagine a better way that's better for everyone, including the insects.
Yeah, I think you used the term slightly changing agricultural practices there, and that did make me wonder whether what you found about the benefits of diversity and those sorts of things, maybe does that cut against some of the economic incentives for large agricultural production and the like?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But actually the data tells us that there's no effect on yield of making these changes. So you get all the benefits of better soil health, better biodiversity, better pollination, all these things, but most of the studies show that crop yield is unaffected by changing to these kind of practices where maybe we grow long strips of crops next to each other instead of just having one massive monoculture.
Yeah, right. And so how optimistic are you about changes in those sorts of practices? Are you seeing practical examples of them rolling out?
There are definitely practical examples. I think we need to work with growers more to help them understand what they could do and what the benefit is for them. So when we work with growers, we often talk about communicating our findings in a very clear cost-benefit ratio. So if you put some dollars in here, this is the benefit. One of the examples I could give you that kind of helps understand this is what we call shelter belts. So these are commonly used across farms in Australia. It's basically, instead of having a fence, you plant out maybe 5 to 10 meters of trees as a fence line along it. And that fence line helps to prevent wind and helps to keep lambs healthier in the spring.
Fantastic.
Well, benefit to nature.
Good to hear. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Jonathan, but thanks very much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Finch, lecturer in entomology from the Tasmania Institute of Agriculture there. That's it for Sunday Extra today. Thanks very much to the Sunday Extra production team. Now it's over to the Radio National Arts Hour. That will be after the news. Talk to you next week.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.